Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast, your destination for all things lacrosse. I am your host, Kyle Devitt. Alongside me, Mr. John Piattelli. John, how are you doing?
Doing great. No complaints today.
Really?
None.
Nothing?
Other than I have to work with you?
Oh,
no, it's all good.
Oh, man. It never stops, does it? It's just never going to stop.
No, you really hurt my feelings by wearing that clock jersey today.
I mean, just a shirt.
I wouldn't be caught wearing that, that's for sure.
You're branded every week, head to toe with your company. This is just the school that empowered me to be a lacrosse writer, and I'm very thankful to them.
Well, that's good to hear.
Oh, man.
Sure, they're grateful that you attended their school.
I will tell you right now that if you told my advisors and professors that I was a writer, that most of them are probably dead now because everyone was really old. But so they'd be spinning in graves, and the ones that would be alive would just be like, you're lying. So something to be said about overcoming the odds.
That's right.
That's right. I guess we should talk about our guests. We have John Donville, late of Cornell, Maryland, Panther City Lacrosse, and the PLL Cannons franchise. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me. This is great.
And we're PLL season's coming up, NLL season's in the playoffs right now. I know you've gotten a couple Rookie of the Week nominations, your number one overall pick. Like, how, describe your experience from going from Cornell to Maryland to the indoor leagues, right? As your kind of formative journey to like the global consciousness of lacrosse now, because you're now a ubiquitous name with player pools and in the pro leagues.
Yeah, it's been a whirlwind, frankly, especially because that last 18 months or so during the pandemic, we didn't get to play. So since then, kind of haven't stopped playing, which has obviously been awesome. That's what we were kind of looking to do. And I use the word formative. Cornell was my formative years as a lacrosse player, I think, no doubt about it. I learned from a ton of great players, ton of great coaches throughout my career in different stops. But certainly the place I made the most growth was Cornell. And then academically, I made the decision to go to Maryland and take a journalism program that was kind of offered at not very many places. And then from a lacrosse perspective, obviously a pretty crazy experience there and a generational team that was cool to kind of be a part of and an opportunity to win a championship, which was obviously a pretty memorable experience. And then, yeah, since getting to the pros, it still just feels like a whirlwind. And I think the best part is just getting to play with and against the best players in the world, guys try look up to, or who I have looked up to for a long time. And then also some peers who have gone through the different stages of my career, getting to see them play with them, play against them has been pretty awesome as well.
John, talk about your formidable years at Cornell. I've always wanted to ask you this question. How difficult was it for you to not only play in the national championship game, but play against some of your best friends versus Cornell?
Yeah, it sucked, frankly. That weekend was bittersweet, more than sweet than bitter. Obviously, it was an awesome experience, and everyone in Maryland that took me in was great. But I obviously would have wished it was against somebody else. But one thing that was kind of cool was just having everyone in my class from Cornell got to have that kind of Memorial Day experience. Obviously, I wish it was together, and we had a weird college career with the pandemic. But I'm glad everyone had that experience. And one moment I'll never forget, Jack was in Columbus. Cornell was walking off the field and we were walking on the field and just gave John and Joe Bartolotto a hug as we were walking by them. I just said, we'll see you next week. And that was pretty cool to kind of share a moment there on the field. And we were opponents after that, but to see everyone that weekend was pretty cool.
Can you talk a little bit more about that experience? Because, I mean, I know Jack's talked about it on the podcast before where I think it was Brian called you from the locker room, right? Was like, this is so amazing. Like, thank you so much. Like, do you have a figure in your life that you were kind of thinking about while that was happening?
Yeah, my dad and my brother, for sure. My brother played at Cornell before I did, played for Team Canada as well. And he really taught me about being a teammate at Cornell. He was a goalie, so kind of up and down, started a little bit, ended up losing his starting spot, then got it back. And just kind of showed me like what the Cornell culture was about before I got there. And then my dad, he took us to our first Cornell game. My first field lacrosse game was at Cornell in 2006. And my dad just looked it up. It was the closest really good program to home and took us down there. And then from there on, that kind of started the path in motion. And He coached me when I was little, coached me through club lacrosse, and just to share that moment with them was pretty cool. And then those were kind of the two things. Obviously, my mom was huge, supporting me and everything, and my sister and that kind of thing. But my dad and my brother on the lacrosse side, for sure.
How did you get started playing lacrosse? I know you're from Canada, Toronto, and obviously box lacrosse is very prevalent in Canada. Were you a hockey player as well?
Yeah, so I played hockey as well. My dad grew up in Calgary, Alberta, which is kind of one of the three main hubs of lacrosse in Canada. So he played when he was a kid. He played box lacrosse, played a little bit of junior B. And then kind of a cool story, actually. So my dad, when he finished his schooling, actually, well, my mom and dad, they moved to Singapore in South Asia. So my siblings and I were all born over there. So I was born in 98 in Singapore. We ended up moving back to Calgary in 99. And as the story goes, my brother is 5 years older. So my brother would have been like 5 and a half. As the story goes, the first thing we did, but when we got home, is my dad went to the store and got some lacrosse sticks for my brother, or just for my brother. I was like a baby at the time. So I was in it really young, 3, 4. I was one of those guys, I think similar to Brian Jack, who was just following my brother around whenever I could. And then an interesting kind of story, which I don't actually know if I really talked about, but when we moved from Calgary to Toronto, this would have been in like 04. So I would have been like 6-ish. We were staying for a short time at my dad's uncle's place. And it was kind of a small house. No, I don't think we had a TV or anything like that. So essentially there's nothing to do. So we were outside all the time and we played a ton of lacrosse. And I can't remember how long we were there. It's only a couple of months. We played a ton of lacrosse. And I think that kind of gave me a leg up at like 5, 6 years old, especially stick skills wise. So that was kind of like an early jump start. And then from there, I just kind of loved it. Played hockey all the way through as well, but definitely lacrosse. Summertime was lacrosse time.
When you're transitioning to playing hockey and box lacrosse, how did you use the skills that you learned there to be an effective field player? And how did you know you're going to be a creator and a scorer?
Yeah, it's interesting because I had the worst hand in hockey in the world. I was a defenseman and would score like once a year. So I guess it was a good time to get all that stuff out. But yeah, my dad always emphasized when I was young that like assists and loose balls, those are his big things, and especially assists. So that was kind of always the focus. And frankly, that was always my skill set growing up. I had to get better as a scorer in college, and I still have to get better as a scorer now. That's the part I really have to work on. So the creating stuff, I think, was just put it instilled in me by my dad when I was little. And really reinforced through positive reinforcement, like get your teammates involved. And then I think one thing that helped me with that, more so than the hockey piece, was just watching a lot of lacrosse. We watched a ton when I was a kid. Obviously, that was because of my brother, but also going to watch junior A games, pro games, all that kind of stuff. And I think that's something that really helped me kind of learn the game, was just watching a lot of it. And if you're a parent, maybe listening to this, that's, I think, an underrated aspect of player development, is just have your kid watch really good players. And I took stuff from so many guys in junior A and that kind of thing. And that really helped me.
Who was your guy? Who was the guy that you wanted to play like?
Yeah, two guys that were like kind of like mid age group, or like I would have been like not really little, but kind of slightly older. I watched a lot of like Randy Stath and Riley O'Connor, and those guys were awesome feeders. So those were kind of guys I took a lot of the passing stuff from. And then Dan Dawson's from my hometown, and he's a righty. So I want to play like Dan, but I don't think anyone plays like Dan because he's so gifted and so unique that I kind of had to adapt my game after. There are other guys, but those would probably be the big names, I think, that come up.
Did you know growing up that because your brother went to Cornell that you were going to head there as well? Or what kind of a recruiting process did you go through?
Yeah, pretty much. I think it was the easiest recruiting job of all time. I wouldn't say I got recruited. It was more they told me I could come, and I said yes. So that's, yeah, Coach Kerwick said, hey, we're going to offer you. My dad and I drove down. He said, we're going to offer you, and then let's go for lunch. We'll go to the art gallery after lunch, and then you can make your decision. And my dad just said, I think we're all good, and shook hands, accepted the offer on the spot, and drove home.
Probably one of the easiest recruiting transactions like I've ever heard in my life. That's pretty good.
It's the greatest recruiting story
and
ever.
One of the best schools in the world, Cornell. So you obviously had a great experience at Cornell. Talk a little bit about your experience, the culture, and what it means to you to have played at Cornell.
Yeah, like I said, it was my school from the start. And having my brother go there, there's a ton of pride, still is obviously. And the culture piece was something that was just huge to me. The chance to win was huge. And the chance to be close to home, I think, was big too. I was about 4 hours door to door or from my hometown where I grew up to Cornell. And I just felt like it was a perfect connection or perfect fit in terms of culture. Guys who wanted to work hard, who wanted to work hard in the classroom as well. And then have some fun as well. I just felt like I fit right in. And I just think there's sometimes you just have something that you can't explain that just fits. And that was me with Cornell. And I think it just goes back to seeing it for that first time back in 06 and then kind of following in my brother's footsteps.
John, so you came from winning tradition programs, Cornell, Maryland, you win a national championship. And the teams you've been playing on, Dallas did make the playoffs, but the Boston Cannons did not do very well this summer. How much of an adjustment challenge has it been for you playing for these professional teams that don't have the same winning traditions that you played for in college?
Yeah, in the summer, it was obviously not the best summer, and I think it was frustrating for everyone on that team. I'm really proud of how hard we fought and that kind of thing. It was a great group to be part of. And one thing I'll always be grateful for is because of some visa stuff that kind of happened right after I got into the league, I was kind of in limbo there for a little bit, wasn't sure where I was going to play. And Coach Quirk gave me an opportunity to play for the rest of the summer. And obviously, he stepped away, but I'll forever be grateful for that opportunity to play. And he really helped me out on that one. And then with Panthers this year, obviously, first round exit for us in the playoffs, but really proud of our group. I think we exceeded expectations. And I think it's just a process, right? And I think you kind of learn that it's hard to be good every single year. And more than winning, it's about being part of a group that does things the right way and treats people the right way. And both those teams did that. So I'm really excited for the future of both and really just pumped up.
I hope you don't mind me asking this question, but I find that there are a ton of pro players, high-level players, that they go into journalism or creative writing or something like that, and they don't use it in lacrosse. Why? Why is that? Do you plan on doing that at some point? Is it just too busy as a player for both leagues right now? Like, what is your thought process there?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. I do plan on using it for lacrosse. I'm actually working on some stuff right now. I definitely will never write about a league that I'm playing in while I'm playing in it. I think there might be a fair argument for, are we a little bit too hard on people who express their thoughts publicly? Maybe, but I also think that's something I respect too, that guys take pride in what's said about their locker rooms and stuff and that kind of thing. So, no, I'll certainly never be writing anything journalistically about the league that I'm playing in, but younger leagues. Yeah, I think college, working on some college stuff right now, actually just to kind of wrap up my degree at Maryland, working on a final class. So should have some cool stuff there. And then I broadcasted some stuff from Junior A with the Minto Cup this year and wrote some articles for them too. So that's kind of something that I'm excited about. But also I want to make sure that it's not about me. It's not about like, oh, when I played, I did this. Like nobody cares, you know? And I think it's hard if I'm going to write stuff and do stuff about those leagues, I want it to be about the guys who are in them and maybe using some of my experience to highlight certain guys, but I don't want the focus to be on me.
Well, I think like selfishly, I am one of those people, right? That like, I know that there are people that read my stuff and they don't like it and they've never met me and they're like, oh, I hate that guy. But I think that's changing now here since I've been here for a couple of years. But
Since you met me.
Yeah. Since you've waltzed into my life and changed everything about my personality completely. I do think I'm asking you because I think it's a problem, right? I think there is a lack of overall writing talent to pick from. And I say that as someone that's trying to cultivate it and help people with that in my position, just doing it for a long time. You do anything for a long time, you can't be actually bad at it. Otherwise, someone wouldn't pay you to do it, right? So I do kind of know what I'm doing. I know. Go ahead. You were saving something. Go ahead. You got a look on your face. Say it.
Well, I'm glad you think so.
Yeah, there you go. All right. I was waiting for that. But I want more player perspective. I know you're saying you're not going to write about the leagues you're in, but I do think it would be really valuable for a higher level, like a Division I college perspective to bring that to people, because I think there really is other sports have it and we don't. And I feel like we should, because so many smart people play lacrosse. So many people go into are good writers and they're just like, nah, I don't get it. So like, I get what you're saying, and that's actually a good perspective, but I would welcome it. I think we need it. You know what I mean? Like, I know there's more people like you that got into journalism that are like, okay, well, I love lacrosse. Like, how can I make this work? Right.
Yeah. I think there's also just a logistical part of it too, where I would love to, I've done a little bit of broadcasting, would love to go into broadcasting lacrosse stuff and share my kind of thoughts and opinions and views on the game that way. But every league in lacrosse plays on Saturday afternoons in the spring. Right. So it's like, okay, I would love to, but I didn't want a lot of Cornell games here because I was taking pregame naps for my games. Right. And that's the reality, is that we're all on the same schedule. So the same thing where I'd love to kick the tires on coaching someday, but while you're playing, it's tough. So I think there's a logistical part of it too, but I think there's kind of different sides of it, but definitely I try to share my own experience. Just don't ever try to give opinions or thoughts on other teams or players of the league. I mean, I just don't think that's a winning philosophy for someone trying to fit into a locker room.
Come on, John, we need more Division I journalists out there. I mean, Kyle's only a Division III guy. I mean, he only went to Clark, and they look at how successful he is.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll come work with you guys. It's a nice team out there.
Thank you.
I will have you freelance for sure. Whatever you want to do.
Perfect.
I will bring you in. I'll give you feedback, all that stuff. I feel like it's like selfish just bringing it up. Just be like, yeah, do you want to be a writer too? Cool. Here's what we do. When you're getting ready to change over from box to outdoor, like, which you're in the process of doing right now, this is a weird question. What is your stick different? Do you have a different stick for both? Because I've heard conflicting things from a lot of people that do both. They're like, oh no, I definitely have a box stick and I have a field stick, and they're totally different.
Yeah, I think it's more important for the guys who are playing attack in field, who need to carry it more. It's kind of counterintuitive actually, but I think a lot of them will actually use deeper pockets in the field than they will in box, even though there's no rules in box, just to have a little more leeway carrying the ball. For me, you know, my play style is fairly similar box to field, so I try to just keep it the same. So definitely a personal preference thing, but I'm pretty much the same. And I maybe there would be slight differences if I was going to design from scratch, but I'm more worried about like keeping my touch and just kind of staying confident that I'll just keep rocking the same stuff.
Is your confidence level the same in the outdoor league versus the indoor, or is it greater in the indoor because you've got, well, essentially you've got more experience playing box than you do outdoor, even though you played at the collegiate level?
Yeah, I think frankly, that's something I'm working on still, is I think the great players at this level, they don't really have a conscience. And if they shoot 10 times and it doesn't go in, they don't care and they just keep going for the 11th. And I mean that in a good way, where they're continuing to get good shots. They're not just doing crazy stuff to get their own numbers.
Like John Piatelli, who had 18 shots the other night and only had one goal.
Wow. Excuse me, bro. So you're okay, man?
I had a couple of those too.
Did you give John a hard time for that one?
Well, you used to, for sure. The one year, I think it was my junior year, which is actually, this is funny because Johnny was such a talented feeder in high school, and then had to kind of, I think, press himself to shoot more and to be more of a scorer. And then his junior year, just kind of like by anomaly, he started out with like 25-0 or something like that. Like all goals, not a single assist. So we were giving him some grief about that. But, you know, he's obviously gifted, extremely gifted in both things. But yeah, I think the confidence thing, it just kind of comes and goes. Sometimes, you know, you feel great. Sometimes you don't. And I think the challenge is like, what can you fall back to when it's not going well, and get yourself going again?
Were you ever intimidated going out on the field? Like, because, I mean, it was your first year, your first overall pick in the NLL, expectations are high. What was that like mentally for you preparing, you know, for these games, and you're playing against the best players in the world?
Yeah, frankly, with box, I wasn't that intimidated. I probably should have been more. I don't know. I don't think there's anything you can really do to prepare for like how it's going to be in the actual game. And I think it took me a while to kind of figure it out. And my biggest thing in box was I had to tell myself to slow down a little bit. I was so excited and so eager that I was buzzing around in the first couple of games, and I was just hard to play with. I wasn't setting myself up to get picked ever. I wasn't setting really picks. I was just kind of running around, swinging the ball, not really doing anything. So kind of had to tell myself to slow down and just let it come. And that was kind of the biggest thing that I had to remind myself of in the year. And that kind of helped me get going a little bit. Slow down, figure out what's going on here, actually read the play a little bit and not just be running around the horseshoe at the top, because you just don't ever really get any good look at it.
Do you ever rely on the coaches to give you the confidence that you need or to settle you down?
Yeah, 100%. And they were huge this year. I can be pretty hard on myself and they tell me that too, but early in the year, especially, I kind of had a slow start and they were just very clear with me. No panic. You're getting good looks and they're going to go in. And whether or not that was true, it felt good. And really, really appreciated the TK and Kyle Goundry, our offensive coordinator in Panther City. And yeah, really, really thankful.
What game do you enjoy playing more, the indoor or the outdoor?
I don't know. It's a good question. Probably indoor a little bit more. Just like you said, I grew up with it. I could also be hard on myself, like I said. So a little bit less pressure with turnovers and bad plays and stuff like that. And box kind of just get to keep playing. And especially being a middie at times in field, if the game flow is not going your way, there can be some time on the sidelines where you're thinking. And thinking, generally speaking, is not very good for me in my game. So the less time to think, the better. So
you're playing box lacrosse in Texas. How are those crowds? Like what? I did two summers in Austin and the lacrosse was very not developed yet, but there was such a huge hunger for it. How has that experience been for you with the crowds and playing in front of that home atmosphere?
Yeah, obviously we wish we're still working on growing the game down here. But one thing that's cool is our building is awesome. Played at Dickies Arena here in Fort Worth, Texas, and it's just an awesome building. And we put on a great show. I work for the team as well in the marketing department right now. And our game presentation folks, our social folks do a great job and put on a great show. So obviously we're going to keep working to make it bigger, but the people who are there are passionate. They know a lot about what's going on and they're just super enthusiastic about it. And I'm optimistic for the future that we're going to keep growing this thing. And then it's going to be something we can really be proud of. It already is, but even more so.
Kind of building on that, the trend up here, so we're in New England, there obviously there was the PBLA, which didn't work out, but there's all these other kind of little teams and leagues that are starting up to kind of teach Americans how to play box. I know you coach one of those, the Rock Hoppas,
yep,
I believe.
A few years ago.
Have you seen, as a Canadian, have you seen that be effective? Like what have you seen an increase in the skill level and the understanding of box in American players?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's undeniable. You look at guys coming in the league now, like Jack Hanna this year, a big year. I think the box stuff helps. I also think just incorporating box technique into field helps a lot. Every kid that plays in the NCAA now has a good understanding of pick play and defenders, at least. Obviously there's some differences in how we want to play it, but they're used to opening up and taking picks or switching on picks, or just they're used to not just playing isolation dodges all the time. And guys, the offensive guys are at least somewhat used to coming off picks and shooting or that kind of thing. And then I think you guys would be better to speak on it. You've been around the game longer than I have, but I think there's just been a general kind of acceptance of allowing kids at younger ages, and I mean this in the field game and the box game, to try more things and to be more unscripted and to push the skill level further. I think you see that in field now where there's stuff happening that guys, the Canadians love to say that Americans used to be unskilled. You go watch American field now. If you're playing in a top Division I program, your stick skills are awesome. It's almost without exception. And so I think the box stop is helping for sure. Having kids play box younger and then incorporating those techniques in the field and having coaches that are allowing kids to be creative and teaching them how to be creative. And I think the skill level of the sport in general, no matter the format, has just kind of elevated in the last couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, you've created a box team. Like, what was that process like for you, right?
Well, having played box in the old NLL, I got a great understanding of the skill sets you develop playing box, because the ball's never out of play. And when you play box, you're always in the play and you have to be engaged. So in the field game, if you're playing defense or or offense. You get certain breaks during the game. Midfield, it's specialized, so you're just out there on offense or defense. But in box, you might get caught on defense. You're running the whole floor. You get more touches. The arena is smaller, so space is different. Spacing is different. You got to keep your head up. And so I realized that the skill set to play box is a lot more difficult and understand the game to be successful on the floor versus in the field, because it's so wide open. And you can hide certain players in the field where you can't hide anybody on the floor.
Yeah, no, I mean, again, we've been over this. My box experience is pretty low, just some senior B or whatever. And it's just, I remember the first game, I was just running for my life. I was like, this is great, but I'm really scared.
Right.
Like, this is fun for me, but also what's happening? And I think that's gone now. I think like players that come in, first of all, the level of coaching is better in America than it's ever been. The opportunity to play box in America is at its highest zenith that it's ever been. And the appetite for it. I mean, listen, you go to an NLL game, you go to a PLL game, there is a marked difference. I think there is. It's not one's better than the other, but they're definitely different.
Yeah. John, would you agree with this? I talked to my son, John, and I said, nothing is going to prepare you for your first game in terms of the intensity. He played in Buffalo, just the action. Once the whistle blows, you can practice and practice and practice and scrimmage. But come game time, I think the intensity and the compete level when you're on the floor is like nothing I ever experienced.
Yeah, no doubt. I absolutely agree with that. And also, I think the biggest thing I noticed was the strength of the league on just kind of on average, especially the defenders, everyone is just huge and super strong and just kind of makes it hard to get inside. And yeah, there's nothing really you can prepare for. But just on the box versus field thing, I think one of the values of it that people don't necessarily realize at the youth level is that box necessitates a lot of decision making. And I think that's where some of the IQ stuff comes in, is in a box game, you're making hundreds of micro decisions. Should I slide? Should I go? Should I draw and dump? And if you go watch a youth field lacrosse game, 10-on-10 game, especially if it's a blowout, there's kids who aren't making a single lacrosse decision the whole game. They're playing defense and they're on the winning team or whatnot. And that's why, even sixes, I think, is a great format for youth players to play in, because we played a lot of sixes at Maryland last year, and it makes people make decisions on the field, and there's no way to really teach that or get better at it. You just have to have people learn how to do it. Should I slide? Should I go? Should I switch a pick? Should I not? Should I drift or should I set a pick? All of those decisions are hard to teach. And then sixes in box, you just necessitate them over and over and over again. And I think that's really beneficial for kids.
Not only are you making more decisions, but you're actually not thinking about making those decisions. You just have to react and make the decision. Where in outdoor, I think sometimes the problem with players is they're thinking too much about what they're going to do instead of just playing and reacting to the play on the field.
Or they're just joysticked to the point where like they're not making the decision. The decision's made for them. And it's like, we're sliding when this happens. And then that's it. That's all you do. Right? Like there's no, the choice is kind of taken away. That's kind of one of the things I hate about watching, like coaching high school now and watching like certain teams. There's just certain teams that are just like, it's like a dude sitting there like this with a controller, like now we dodge, click. And again, in box, you can't do that. If you do that, like, of course there are man out plays, there's plays to be run, there's clear outs, all that stuff, there's picks, but you still have to have an adaptive ability. You still have to be able to be a creative player. Like, I don't even think you can play defense in box without having some sort of creativity in your game, right?
John?
Yeah, I think you kind of get used to the gimmicks a lot more too. You're used to seeing slip picks and that kind of thing. And box, for those who don't know, in Canada, you're not allowed by the rules to play offense, defense until you're like 15. So when you're young, everyone is playing everything, which is how you get a guy like Ian McKay from the Archers and for the Bandits. He played defense in box and he scored like 60 goals a year in Vermont. That's kind of those guys are almost the most Canadian players because they really have the whole skill set that it creates when you're looking.
Yeah. I made you promise me that you would tell me a John Tillman story. So I'm going to ask for it right now. Best John Tillman story.
I'm trying to think. I think maybe my favorite Till story was, when I was kind of looking into going to Maryland, I sent him an email. We chatted pretty briefly, and he started to kind of sell me on the offense we were running and on this kind of stuff. And kind of said, like, hey, I just want a chance to play. Like, basically, like, I didn't really want to talk about it. I was like, as long as you give me a chance to earn a spot and compete, then I'm all good. And on like our first, Tills went to Cornell as well. And on like our first or second call, we were chatting about like where we were going that night and what kind of beer we drank and like that kind of thing. And I remember holding the phone up. I'm like, wait, what? What are you talking about right now? And then after that, like in the summer leading up, he would text me like every week, like, hey, you need anything? And I remember just thinking like, I'm a college graduate. I don't know what I could possibly be needing every single week, but I appreciate you looking out for it.
It's the crazy thing about Tillman, man. Like I feel it sometimes. There are some times where he looks at me and he's just like, you're kind of my enemy, right? Like, cause you're the journalist, you're trying to get dirt, but I always try to disarm him by trying to make him laugh or something. Like when you guys won, we're in the press conference and I'm sitting there and I'm like, what question could I ask him that he will actually answer? Because he does this thing where you ask him questions and he doesn't answer the question. He just talks about how great the team is, which is great. Like, do that. I don't get mad at that or anything. Like, it's my job to word the question correctly. And I my biggest win was I was like, all right, so you're kind of a crazy person. You love lacrosse. Like, you won your championship. But what I want to know is, how fast are you going to be back on the field recruiting? And his smile, I was like, yes. Got you. And then all he did was talk about the offense. And I was like, I don't care that you didn't say anything. I got you to smile on camera, feel like it's a win. And we had him on the podcast. And I remember, I don't know if you remember this. I was upset after the podcast was over. And you're like, no, that went really well. And it did. It turned out to be a good podcast. But I was just like, he beat us. He beat us. We tried to ask him these questions and we tried to get him and he beat us. Like it sometimes it is like a push-pull adversarial thing, but I just want to say, like, too, like, I know you're very, you've made your stance clear on not talking about the league that you're playing in, which I totally respect. But there is like an aspect of fun to it that is maybe people don't see it all the time, but I like to talk about it in areas like this where it's very free flowing, where I can just be like, yeah, you got me, or like, I'm going to get you, something like that. Like, that's actually the cool thing about working in lacrosse and why I'm like, turning this podcast into an advertisement to come write and work in lacrosse is it is fun. Like it's not, I know people that work in other industries and work in other sports. And a lot of them are miserable because the expectations placed upon them and the rules that they have to follow are so insane. And in lacrosse, like there really isn't any. I mean, you could walk up to any lacrosse game, you, Jack Piattelli, walk up to a lacrosse game, just be like, yeah, I'm going to get tickets. I'm Jack Piattelli. And they'll be like, sure, here you go. Wherever you want to sit, like, what do you want? What do you need? Just because of who you are, what you've done for the sport, you're recognizable, right? Like, that's actually a cool thing about lacrosse, that you can have the experience that you would pay thousands of dollars to have in other sports. Just $15, $20, $60. Like, that's one of the coolest things about lacrosse, and being a fan of lacrosse as well as working in it is it's just great. I mean, we've done podcasts today and one of the themes that we've said is like how great this is that we get to do this and how like impactful it is on our lives, how lacrosse is impacting us and how this podcast is just so much fun to talk to people and bring people in on that part of our lives.
Yeah. And John's a guest today because he's one of my son's best friends, and obviously he's a great lacrosse player and willing to come on the show. And I'll let you be Jack Piattelli for a day if you want.
There you go. Will you? I just want this shirt. I just want the shirt. Hey. I don't know if you listen to the podcast, but this is, we're about average for Kyle Diggs. There's one more coming. So
okay, it's
hey,
fine.
If you get a chance, you got to watch John Donville play. I remember John watching you your freshman year and didn't know you very well. And I think after the game, I'm a stats guy watching the stats and so on and so forth. And I think you had 8 points. I go, John Donville had 8 points. I didn't see that. So I started watching you play. There's no flash in your game. you just get the job done. One of the best off-ball players, feeders. You see the game so well. And those who know the game realize how valuable your skill set is. And that might have taken probably a couple of years at Cornell for fans, other coaches to recognize. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think so. Obviously, in the Ivy League, it's a lot better now than when I started, but you don't get as much TV time as other folks. And that stuff matters more than people realize in terms of recognition. Not that recognition really matters that much, but if you want to talk about public perception and stuff, you got to play well on TV. And I actually played really poorly on TV a couple of times early in my career, which probably didn't help. But I think also I hopefully improved while I was there too. And I learned a lot from Jeff Teed and that kind of thing, learning how to. I was never really an off-ball guy until I got to school and realized that I was slower than everybody else. So I was like, okay, I got to figure something out here. And then really had some good opportunities to play with guys who my skill set kind of meshed in with. I played with Connor Fletcher, who's 6'4", two-handed and faster than everybody. And for a guy like me, that was a good setup. And then obviously playing with Peter was awesome. Playing with Johnny, like you said, Jack is a tremendous joy. Obviously, as my buddy, but you know, we also found pretty good chemistry together and stuff like that. So it was just a kind of a good setup for me all around.
You're a great example of lacrosse is a game made up of great athletes, non-athletes, big guys, small guys, skilled guys, non-so-such skilled guys. But like you said, you're an athletic guy, but you're not the fastest guy. But you're one of the smartest guys on the floor in the field. And IQ doesn't get emphasized enough and how important it is to know not only your role, what your strengths and weaknesses are, and really getting to understand what's going on in front of you.
Yeah, I think the way I always thought about it too is like, all right, so you want to have a big year, you want to score 30 goals. Am I going to beat a guy 25 times, 30 times and score an assist? No. And that's like, it's unfeasible. And it's also like mentally kind of overwhelming. But if you're like, all right, I could find five off a rebound. I could find five goals off cutting. I could find five in transition, five on the power play or something like that. It's like, okay, well now you try to score in different ways and you can patch together a good year. And then the other thing I'll say is I took pride in college and being part of good offensive units. And I think at Cornell that really started with Jess. And how he kind of prioritized the team offense more than his own. And, you know, something I realized later is that when you prioritize the team offense and you just focus on playing good offense as a group, everyone tends to get their numbers more anyways. So I think people always kind of juxtapose those as kind of a sacrifice to the whole. And I've never seen it like that. I think the more you focus on playing good offense, the more everyone actually puts their best.
And you're going to have greater results as a team as well. And I think
sure.
A lot of great players at the high school level and maybe even the college level go out on the field and say, oh, I got to have my 8 points in order for us to be successful. And that's not the case because now they're playing selfishly and they want to get the points instead of you spreading out the ball. But you may end up with, again, 8 points if you spread the ball out amongst all your teammates because they're as capable and you've got to give them confidence as well. And Jeff, to your point, was a great example of one of the best players ever to play the game who shared the ball
right.
as well as anybody.
And it actually goes the other way too, where guys can have like a good stat line and they played bad in for the team, right? Like that happens. I've seen that happen more, again, my traumatic year of coaching that is this year. I've seen that more happen more this year than any year I've ever done anything in lacrosse is like, and it's not just my team. I've seen it at the college level and stuff. Guys that have like, you know, oh, I don't know. I have 6 points, but we lost. Or this guy, like the perfect example of this right now, we're talking about this right before Yale plays in the first round of the NCAA playoffs in D1. It's like Matt Brando is this, right? Like there are games where like Matt Brando has one goal and three assists and people are like, what's wrong with Brando? And it's like Chris Lyons had 8 goals. Like, do you not know how offense works? Like, I've gotten a lot of people like say stuff like that to me, and I'm just like, I don't know what to tell you. Like, you have to watch the game, and that's the other part of like, again, speaking to journalism and stuff. There are people with tons of opinions that just look at stat lines, and you're like, you can't that's not the job, man. That's not what we got to do. But I think you understand that. And I'm going to come to John's defense here. I would, my comp for you is a weird comp because I think you play with a smoothness that is like old school mid-2000s Virginia attackman smoothness, like Danny Gladding. God, what's his name? The guy who calls games, Matt. No, I don't have it. Chris Rotelli, better example. Chris Rotelli is, you know, what wasn't the fastest guy, wasn't even that big. Like, you're bigger than he is. But the ability to just drag the ball, pull the defender, and move it immediately is something that has made teams like Cornell very good and Maryland very good. And it's pretty apparent that you had a role in those because that's what you're good at. So that's my playing compliment for you. And I hope that you get to do that for the Cannons.
Thank you.
Because the Lord knows the Cannons need that this summer. Let's get some of that. If you're a Cannons fan, that is.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think that's going to do it for us on our end. That was a nice little journey through Cornell, through
Maryland Championship.
Maryland Championship. Nice Till story. Always good. Appreciate you coming on, John.
John, good luck this summer. Look forward to watching you play. Appreciate it. That was 46 minutes that went by very quickly.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, bye. John.
And all right. Thanks again for listening to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. For Jack Piattelli, I'm Kyle Devitt. See you next time.